Welcome to this deep dive.
It is great to be here.
In this lesson, we're exploring inquiry, curiosity, and evidence-based learning.
We really are getting into the weeds today.
For sure. If you've watched the overview, this will build on that. If not, you'll still be able to follow along. Now, let's go further by connecting the topic to real university experiences, study challenges, confidence, and practical academic habits.
I love that we're doing this. It's so needed.
Yeah, because, well, imagine this. You cram for an exam, right? You score a 95%, and you walk out feeling like a complete genius.
Oh, we've all been there.
Right. But cognitive scientists would actually argue that you haven't learned a single thing.
Not a thing. It's wild.
So today we're looking at why our default study habits are effectively just an illusion of competence. And we'll talk about how true academic confidence requires completely dismantling the way most of us were taught to learn.
It is a harsh reality to confront, I'm not going to lie, but it's absolutely necessary. I mean, the volume of information you're expected to process as a university student is just staggering.
Oh, completely. It's like drinking from a fire hose.
Exactly. And when faced with that volume, the natural human response is to slip into survival mode. You sit in a lecture hall, you frantically transcribe what the professor says, and you just try to memorize it long enough to pass a test.
Yep. Just surviving the week.
Right. But our core mission today is to move beyond that illusion of competence. We are looking at the mechanics of how you can actively engage with material in a way that builds a bulletproof intellectual foundation.
Okay, let's unpack this, because before we can adopt new empowering habits, we really have to look at the cognitive traps we are currently falling into.
The traps.
Specifically, the trap of passive learning. I mean, look, we've all been the passenger here. You were in a 9 a.m. general education class, the professor's reading bullet points off a slide, and your brain just goes into screensaver mode.
Screensaver mode, that is the perfect way to describe it.
You were writing down the words so you feel productive, right?
Yeah.
But you aren't actually analyzing anything. You're just a human photocopier.
Yeah, just watching the scenery blur by through the train window. You see it, but you aren't exploring it at all.
Exactly. And that brings up the million-dollar question.
Yeah.
Is this passive approach, this screensaver mode, the reason we so often forget everything the minute we hand in an assignment?
What's fascinating here is the underlying cognitive mechanics of exactly that phenomenon. It really comes down to something called cognitive load theory.
Okay, cognitive load theory, what is that?
Well, your working memory, the part of your brain processing information in real time, has a very limited capacity. It can only hold about 4 to 7 chunks of information at once.
Only 4 to 7, that's tiny.
It is. So when you are passively transcribing a lecture or just, dragging a highlighter across a textbook, you are maxing out your working memory with the physical act of processing words.
Oh, wow. So you're busy just reading, not actually understanding.
Right. And because you aren't doing anything meaningful with that data, because you aren't challenging it or connecting it to prior knowledge, your brain just treats it as temporary data.
And then what?
To save space, it simply dumps it. It never transfers to your long-term memory.
So it literally goes in one ear and out the other. Not because we aren't smart, but because we are using our brain's hardware incorrectly. We're like maxing out the RAM without ever saving to the hard drive.
Precisely. That is exactly it. And this passive approach creates 3 severe academic pitfalls. First, you get a very shallow understanding.
Like just memorizing a flashcard.
Yeah, exactly. You might memorize the definition of a term to pass a multiple choice question, but you have no idea how it connects to broader concepts.
Makes sense. What's the second pitfall?
Second, it leads to incredibly weak engagement. You get bored and distracted because you have no personal stake in the material.
Right, because you're just copying words.
Exactly. And third, and maybe worst of all, it actively suppresses your critical thinking. You are conditioned to accept whatever the textbook says as absolute, unquestionable truth.
Which is incredibly dangerous, especially in a university setting where the entire point is to challenge existing ideas.
Unquestionably.
When you are just a passive receiver, you are asking what we call convergent questions. Those are questions that converge on one single predetermined right answer.
Right, like asking, what year was the steam engine invented?
Exactly. That is a trivia question. It doesn't require actual thought.
No, it doesn't. And the antidote to that is divergent questioning. Divergent questions open up possibilities.
Give me an example.
So instead of asking what year the steam engine was invented, you ask, how did the invention of the steam engine permanently disrupt local agricultural economies?
Oh, I see. that requires synthesis.
It does. It requires curiosity. And curiosity is the engine that drives true academic discovery. When we formalize that curiosity, we call it inquiry-based learning.
Inquiry-based learning. So that's the deliberate process of learning through active questioning and investigation.
Yes. When you flip the script from passively receiving facts to actively asking divergent questions, you drastically change how your brain encodes the information.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because we aren't just talking about a vague, feel-good instruction to just, like, be more curious.
No, not at all.
When you look at the mechanics of inquiry-based learning, there are four clear, actionable strategies to build this into your day-to-day university life. Number one, ask deeper questions. Number two, investigate multiple viewpoints.
Which is huge.
Huge. Number three, seek supporting evidence. And number four, reflect on findings critically. And all of this is held together by evidence-based thinking.
Yes, that is the uncompromising standard. Reliable, verifiable evidence is the only thing that should strengthen your conclusions.
Okay, but I have to push back here.
Please do.
I hear you on all of this.
Yeah.
I really understand the value of divergent questioning and gathering multiple viewpoints. But let's be real.
Okay.
At 11:30 p.m., the night before a 10-page research paper is due, absolutely no student cares about a bulletproof academic foundation.
Fair point.
They care about the word count. They care about surviving the deadline. Isn't this deep multi-viewpoint inquiry method incredibly overwhelming and time-consuming for a student who is already stretched thin?
I get that.
Like, how does this actually survive the reality of academic procrastination?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, that 11:30 p.m. panic attack is exactly what this methodology is designed to eliminate.
Really?
Yes. I understand the skepticism, and it does feel deeply counterintuitive to a stressed student. But seeking multiple viewpoints and securing supporting evidence before you start writing actually saves you massive amounts of time.
Oh, because from where I'm sitting, adding more research to a tight deadline sounds like a recipe for a meltdown.
Well, think about what usually happens during that midnight writing session. A student grabs the very first viewpoint they find on Google Scholar, decides it's their thesis, and starts furiously typing to hit the work down.
Yep. Been there.
Right. But because they didn't do the inquiry, their foundation is structurally compromised. Around page 5, they suddenly realize their main argument makes no logical sense.
Or they find out it's completely contradicted by a major historical fact they just ignored.
Exactly. And they hit a dead end.
I see where you're going. It is like trying to build a bridge by starting from the middle. You can suspend things in the air for a little while, and it looks like you are making progress.
But eventually, gravity takes over.
Yeah, the whole thing collapses, and you have to start over from the shores anyway.
That is a perfect analogy. By front-loading your curiosity, by forcing yourself to investigate multiple angles and secure reliable, diverse evidence first, you are building the supports on both shores.
So you establish a comprehensive understanding of the landscape first.
Exactly. Once that foundation is poured, the actual writing process becomes incredibly fast and virtually stress-free because you aren't guessing your way through the argument.
You are simply explaining the connections you have already confidently made. You aren't desperately summarizing one article to fill space. You're synthesizing a real, informed perspective.
Exactly.
And to prove that this isn't just abstract theory from a textbook, let's look at a real-world case study of a university student who navigated these exact challenges.
Oh, this is a great example.
Right. So this student was struggling with feeling lost in the academic shuffle and consciously decided to adopt these inquiry-based learning habits.
They explicitly focused on preparing divergent, evidence-based questions before walking into class.
Yes. And the outcome wasn't just that the quality of their essays improved, though of course it did. What stood out to me was the drastic physical shift in how they showed up in the room. Their class participation just skyrocketed.
That physical shift in the classroom dynamic is a crucial psychological detail.
Right. Because raising your hand in a lecture hall of 200 peers is terrifying for most people. If you are a passive learner, the classroom feels like an interrogation room.
It really does. You feel like you were supposed to regurgitate the one right answer to the professor, and if you get it wrong, you're publicly exposed as an imposter.
Yes. The anxiety stems from the pressure to perform perfection. But when you shift your mindset to inquiry-based learning, your role in that room fundamentally changes.
You move from being a passive receiver who must defend their intelligence to an active investigator.
Exactly. You aren't raising your hand to prove you know the answer. You are raising your hand to stress test a concept. You're asking, hey, does this theory hold up if we apply it to this other piece of evidence?
And that subtle shift in identity from performer to investigator removes the ego from the equation. It naturally builds genuine academic confidence.
Because an investigator cannot be wrong for asking a rigorous question.
Precisely. It drastically reduces the fear of speaking up.
You are taking the immense pressure off yourself to be flawless and putting the focus entirely on the integrity of the inquiry itself, which is a much safer, more intellectually honest place to operate from.
Yep.
And that brings us to holding up a mirror to you, the listener. Think about your own study habits for a moment. When you sit down with a syllabus or open a massive PDF reading assignment, are you just trying to memorize the bolded vocabulary words? Or are you actively interrogating the material?
This raises an important question, and it is the core reflection prompt we want you to sit with today. How can curiosity and inquiry improve my academic growth?
That's the big one.
It is. I encourage you to honestly assess your current routines. We all have classes where we coast. Identify those areas. Where are you operating on screensaver mode?
Take a second to really ponder how this applies to your specific major. Why is curiosity vital for the lab report you are writing right now? How does inquiry-based learning actually improve your grasp of a complex macroeconomics topic you are struggling with?
Yeah, or if you were studying engineering, history, or nursing, how does relying strictly on solid, multifaceted evidence change the literal safety and efficacy of the work you will do in the real world?
It is about creatively injecting curiosity into spaces that feel devoid of it.
Let's say you are taking a mandatory prerequisite class that you find incredibly dry. The passive learner suffers through it. The active learner asks, how can I formulate just one divergent question that connects this dry material to the career I actually want?
Oh, I like that. That single question is the bridge from passivity to mastery.
It really is.
So what does this all mean in terms of our daily practice? Awareness is great, but action is what actually changes our grades and our stress levels. How do we implement these mechanics immediately?
Well, there is a brilliant practical application activity you can do the very next time you study. It is wonderfully simple.
The five-question rule, right?
Yes. You choose one topic, maybe a concept from a lecture you have tomorrow. Before you read anything, you write down five divergent inquiry-based questions about it. Not yes or no questions. Deep exploratory questions.
Okay, then what?
Then you identify the types of evidence sources you will need to answer them. And finally, you explicitly write down what you aim to learn.
The brilliance of the five-question rule is that it acts as a cognitive warm-up. You are activating the brain's search algorithms before you even begin reading.
Exactly. When you finally do read the text, your brain isn't passively overwhelmed by the word count. It is actively hunting for the answers to those specific five questions.
It forces you past the obvious surface-level first question and makes you dig into the nuances.
And because we live in an era of information overload, we have to talk about how to manage all the data you will find when you go hunting. We need systems.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Think of digital tools like Evernote or Pocket, not just as note-taking apps, but as an external hard drive for your prefrontal cortex.
That's a great way to put it.
When you're gathering evidence from multiple viewpoints, you cannot rely on your working memory. It will fail you. By immediately saving sources into an external system, you drastically reduce your cognitive load.
Exactly. You are outsourcing the labor of remembering to the software. That frees up 100% of your brain's processing power to actually analyze what the evidence means. And to break out of our own confirmation bias, utilizing an RSS reader like Feedly is essential. The danger of modern research is that search algorithms are designed to feed us what we already agree with.
Oh, the echo chamber.
Yes. Feedly allows you to bypass the algorithm. You can intentionally curate a dashboard that pulls in a left-leaning economic journal, a right-leaning financial blog, and a neutral academic database all into one feed. It forces you to confront conflicting evidence daily.
So we have these tools to capture and organize information. But capturing information isn't the same as structuring a rigorous argument. How do we take all these competing viewpoints and actually build a thesis that won't collapse?
That is where the recommended reading for this deep dive becomes incredibly valuable. We have A More Beautiful Question by Warren Berger, which explores the sheer power of inquiry in driving innovation.
Such a good book.
It is. And we have The Craft of Research by Wayne C. Booth, Gregory G. Colum, and Joseph M. Williams, which is practically the holy grail for understanding how to structurally weave evidence into an unassailable academic argument.
And then, crucially, we have Make It Stick by Peter C. Brown, Henry L. Roediger III, and Mark A. McDaniel.
Make It Stick is paramount to everything we are discussing today because it breaks down the hard cognitive science of memory retention. It dismantles the myth of fluency.
Fluency? That's that dangerous illusion of competence we talked about earlier.
Right. It is when you reread a textbook chapter three times, the words feel familiar and easy to process, and you trick yourself into believing you have mastered the concept.
But familiarity is not mastery. Just because I can recognize a song on the radio doesn't mean I can sit down at a piano and play it.
Exactly. What the authors of Make It Stick prove is that true learning requires what cognitive scientists call desirable difficulties.
Desirable difficulties. I love that phrase. It sounds like an oxymoron, but it makes total sense.
It does. It is the concept that the slight, frustrating struggle of actively retrieving information from your brain is the exact mechanism that cements it into long-term memory.
So the struggle is actually the point.
Yes. Think of creating a neural pathway like walking through a dense, overgrown forest. The first time you try to recall an answer without looking at your notes, it is incredibly difficult. You are bushwhacking through the weeds.
Yeah, it feels awful.
But every time you force yourself to actively retrieve that information through inquiry, through self-testing, through synthesizing multiple viewpoints, you clear the path a little more. Eventually, it becomes a paved road.
And passive learning.
Passive learning, just rereading the text, is like taking a helicopter over the forest. Mm-hmm. You see the path, it feels easy, but yep. You haven't actually built the neural infrastructure on the ground.
That is a phenomenal way to understand it. The effort isn't a sign that you are failing. The effort is the literal sensation of your brain building new infrastructure.
Exactly.
It all comes full circle. The evidence supports the evidence-based learning. So as we wrap up this deep dive, let's summarize the absolute fundamental mechanics we've explored today. First, curiosity strengthens learning. It is the divergent spark that initiates the process.
Second, inquiry improves understanding. It is the active, deliberate questioning you undertake based on that spark.
Third, evidence supports reliable conclusions. It is the multifaceted bedrock that prevents your arguments from collapsing.
And finally, questioning encourages critical thinking. It is the desirable difficulty that keeps your neural pathways sharp.
These are not just high-minded, abstract ideals reserved for graduate students. They are highly practical, daily mechanics that will actively reduce your midnight anxiety, transform your classroom participation from a source of fear into a source of discovery.
And they'll make your time at university significantly more intellectually rewarding. You are permanently shifting your identity from someone who just temporarily rents information to someone who actively owns and creates knowledge.
And that is a remarkably powerful place to operate from.
Yeah.
So we want to leave you with a final challenge, a final provocative thought to carry into your classes this week.
Yes, try this out.
The very next time you hear a stated fact, whether you are sitting in a massive lecture hall, reading a peer-reviewed article, or even just scrolling through your social media feed on the bus, I want you to pause. Stop the scroll. Do not just accept it passively. Ask just one divergent, inquiry-based question about the evidence behind that fact.
Just one question. Where exactly did it come from? Whose viewpoint is heavily represented? And more importantly, whose viewpoint is conveniently missing?
See how quickly it changes your relationship to the information being fed to you.
Building this kind of academic confidence absolutely takes time. Restructuring how your brain processes information is a marathon, not a sprint.
It really is.
But every single time you choose the slight struggle of curiosity over the comfortable illusion of passivity, you are strengthening your intellectual foundation. Be consistent in your efforts. Be remarkably patient with yourself during the process and keep asking those beautiful questions.
Absolutely. The effort is the reward. To help you keep building and refining these essential skills, we strongly encourage you to review the end-of-module study guide and complete the workbook activities.
Yes, actually applying the five-question method we've talked about is how you build those paths in the forest and make it stick.
We also want to deeply acknowledge and thank the authors of our reference materials discussed today: Warren Berger, Wayne C. Booth, Gregory G. Collum, Joseph M. Williams, Peter C. Brown, Henry L. Roediger III, and Mark A. McDaniel.
Their groundbreaking work on inquiry, research structures, and cognitive science is invaluable to everything we've explored today.
And finally, to you, the listener, thank you. Thank you for dedicating your time to your own academic growth today, for stepping out of the passenger seat, and for exploring these complex ideas with us. We will see you in the next deep dive.